Red rum, red rum, red rum. I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, head out of the Del Real, here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle, soon to be Bizarro World. This is the 357th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk about the bloodbath that is the resource space right now. We're going to talk about the overall indices, the Fed, gold, silver, copper, all the things. What to do? Are we buying? Are we holding? Are we selling? I've had more subscribers and shareholders write into me this week than I have in the past 6 months. That's saying a lot because you all are great about writing in. We appreciate all of it. A lot to get to, but first and foremost, as always, Mr. Hodge, a busy week, a busy day. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing quite good, Gerardo, better than much of the rest of the world, that's for sure. I won't say I've seen it all, because certainly have not, but was around for 2008, was around for COVID, and have seen some high volatility bouts during that time. And so, yeah, the subscribers write in when the screen is all red. They want their hand held. We'll help them navigate through it. That is, in fact, our job. So let's get to that. And congratulations once again to you on the marriage of your son. I know that happened last weekend and you were the officiant. So well done. You said it was a beautiful ceremony. How is he and the new bride and the rest of your family?
Thank you so much. It was beautiful. A milestone moment for the family. He is great. The bride is great. The in-laws were fantastic. It was great to meet them. It couldn't have gone any better. Glad I paid for it before this week. So, right. Glad that that's taken care of and we don't have to sell any stock to pay for a wedding here. So, thankful all around. Appreciate you asking. Look, let's get to it. We've had one of the most brutal sell-offs in the junior resource space, the resource space, yes, but in the junior resource space, the moves this week, look, just personally, if I was worth $10 last week, I'm worth $5 this week. And if you were worth $5, you're worth $2.50, right? Things getting cut in half, 30, 40, 50% moves to the downside this week. That on the back of gold coming down, you know, off the $5,000 level, currently trading at $46.50 as we speak. Silver also got taken to the woodshed. It pulled back as low as $65, actually recovered the 70 handle really, really well. So let's start with gold and silver. Gold pulled down to the 4550 level, regained the 4600 level, in position now at 4651, I think, to make another run. Forget what I think. Technical levels, what does that look like, Nick? And are we still in a gold bull market?
Right to the chart. And I should say that we're making this a free premium episode of Bizarro World. That was your wonderful idea just 8 or so minutes ago. So we'll talk about some stocks and then we'll give a bit more insight than we typically do in the free version and we'll publish it for free. So you're looking at the chart for gold. You can see it was actually lower, Gerardo, back in the first day of February after everyone was euphoric at the Vancouver conferences, the MIF and the VRIC. And it bounced right back from that above the $5,200 level as the war drum started to pound and then the bomb started to fly and we got the sell-off post-PDAC, PDAC curse, if you will, that we're seeing now. So the green line on the chart there is down around here at 4330, call it. That's the long-term support. So you're in a long-term bull market unless you break down through that level. There's obviously a lot of pain out there right now, commensurate with gold doing what it's doing, selling off, commensurate with what silver's doing, selling off, and what copper's doing as well. I would remind you about gold volatility. Mm. It has its own level of volatility, and you can see that that is quite elevated over here at 35, not as high as it was there as during the sell-off in early February that I was just talking about. But certainly you've got a nice long red candle here with volatility spiking to the upside as we get a protracted war in Iran that was only supposed to take a day or two and then a week. And
it's an excursion, Nick. It's an excursion.
Well, that's a Ford SUV. This is a war. it was only supposed to take a little while, and now we don't know when it's going to end. Trump will feel it in his bones when it's going to end, et cetera. No one really knows. And so that's an important point to make in times like this. No one really knows the answer. No one knows, you know, what's going to come from day to day. And then let me just show you copper and I'll stop sharing the screen and we can talk about whatever else you want to talk about.
Show me silver after you do copper, because I definitely want to touch on silver as well.
Good. Here's a nice long-term chart of copper. This is going back some 6 or 7 years here now. I keep these lines on there. And you can see that you're in a bull market that continues to make higher highs and higher lows. And what you're getting now is really a consolidation or a correction inside of a long-term copper bull market. It would have to go all the way down to the trend line here around $4.75 a pound to go into a bear market, which I don't see in the cards. You can actually see how the candle, even though the wick dipped down here today to $5.29 or thereabouts, the clothesline is up above that green line that I have there at 550 or thereabouts. So that's the sort of the technical levels for gold and copper. You said you wanted to see silver. I probably don't have lines on that chart for that little bastard metal, but let's look at it nonetheless. I mean, it's a very similar chart to gold here, right?
Yep.
God, if I had to pick a level, you could go down here to $58, something like that. I mean, I would want it to really hold the $66 level where you see a wick two today. But really firm support here at the $70 level, which is what you mentioned at the top of the hour. And so doesn't feel good, obviously. I feel bad for the people that rushed headlong into the precious metal sector in and around late January and early February. But taking your hat and putting it on my head for a second, being a glass half full guy, there's a lot of opportunities that are presenting out there in the juniors, which you mentioned are down some 40 and 50%. So what else do you want to talk about?
No, look, I think it's important to reiterate to everyone out there, even if you came in December or January and you're looking at your account now and it's down 50-60%, 50-60% on these type of pullbacks is nothing in the junior space. I don't know how many times I've been through that. And, you know, it doesn't matter if it's $1,000, $100,000 or $10 million that you have in the market. You see anything get cut in half, you're going to feel it psychologically. I would encourage all of you, again, perspective and context. We were gleeful about these prices in February. We were VRIC and PDAC and MIF, as you mentioned, and everybody was just ecstatic that we were headed to 5,000. So I say that to say, look, volatility is absolutely here in the precious metals market. I expect $200-$300 moves in the gold space both ways for the rest of the year. We are clearly in a precious metals bull market. So if you came in December and January and you just saw everything going up and everyone making a lot of money and you put whatever capital you allocated into the market and now you're seeing that you're down 50%, it's part of the course for the resource space. It's really part of the course for the junior resource space. It's Christmas in March. I was really tempted to get in and buy and add to my biggest personal holdings. And the only reason I didn't today is because I already own so much of this stuff. So we're good. Again, like Nick mentioned, we're making this a premium portion of the podcast is going to be free to everybody this go around. It'll give those of you who have not yet subscribed to the premium portion a little dose of what we do every week for those folks. And so, look, everyone knows my four biggest personal holdings, right? Right now they go, if we're talking dollars, it's in our groups. It's going to be PMET, it's going to be Hannon, it's going to be Lion Rock, and it's going to be Kingsman. I'll give that to you right off the bat. Each one of those is down 30 to 40% this week. Would I rather they be up 30 to 40% this week? Absolutely. Is my thesis, is my macro thesis on gold and silver broken? Absolutely not. Clear gold bull market, clear silver bull market. So then I go to company specific catalysts one at a time. The one thing that all of those companies did very, very well here during, you know, the joyful February and January, they raised a lot of money at much higher prices. Kingsman's got $17 million in the bank. They recently raised at $2.50. That's in the bank. We don't have to go back to the market for a year or two. We're going to be drilling two precious metals districts here over the course of the next several months. So, yeah, I'd rather see it at $3 than closer to $8. But I'm not selling right now. I'm not exiting my position. So it's not really consequential unless you have to sell in this market. Hannon, same thing. They raised $9 million at 75 cents, did it without a warrant. So when I see it at 51 cents today, it's an absolute steal. It took all of me not to get in the market and go buy some. Again, I own so much of it in the personal account because I know what we have with Previsto Central, which is being permitted. And, you know, that'll likely be end of the year, early 2027 story. But I also know from catching up with Michael Hudson yesterday and the day before that, that they're looking, and they've said this publicly, they're looking at other projects in the meantime because they're hell-bent on making a gold discovery of significance in this gold bull market. I can go down the list, Lion Rock. I mean, all of these companies are companies that when we have markets like this, yes, it's painful to see your stock down 50%. The question you need to ask yourself is, are they adding value while the markets stabilize? The markets will stabilize, folks. It doesn't help that we have, you know, the potential for World War III, and it doesn't help that we have an administration that seemingly doesn't know its left hand from its right hand or its ear from its mouth. But with that being said, the markets will stabilize. And when you have oil fields and gas fields being hit indiscriminately back and forth in the Middle East, you're going to get this type of volatility. You're going to get margin calls. You're going to get people that need to sell their gold because it's likely one of the few assets that, other than oil, and if you're getting bombs, you're not being able to monetize that oil. You're going to get a margin call, and you're going to have to sell some of the things that are up and are in the green. Gold fits that beautifully. Silver fits that beautifully. So I say all that to say, gold bull market's intact. All of those stocks raised capital when they had to. With LionRock, they have over $2 million still in the bank. A phase two program coming up. Gold and lithium assays still pending. I'm excited for those. That's an absolute bargain and a steal at these levels. So a lot of those, every one of those companies that I just mentioned, positioned very, very, very well. PMET's got over $100 million. Just announced the widest cesium intercept in its history in a new discovery. So again, yes, we want share prices to go higher. That comes with the catalyst. That comes by adding value during tough weeks like this one. All those companies are checking those boxes, and you know, the younger one of the four, I would say right now is LionRock, because we're waiting to get a clearer picture on the gold and the lithium and the potential scale. I think we see that as soon as the market stabilizes in the next week or two, and I couldn't be more excited. At 16.5 cents, it's an absolute bargain, everyone. So if you're holding those shares and you're down 50-60%, sit tight. It's the hardest thing to do when you're trading or speculating or investing is to do nothing. If you bought LionRock at 40 cents, you didn't buy it, Rom. Just you were early at 40 cents, but then it went to 56 and now it's at 16.5. Depending on where you were on your entry point, you either were real smart or don't feel real smart. But if they got the goods, everything will re-rate. Markets will stabilize. This is a precious metals bull market. Copper. Let's talk copper. Midterm, long-term trend, absolutely bullish. Short-term, looks bearish?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, lots of things look bearish in the short term, but are in structural or long-term bull markets. And that was one of the points I was going to make as I was listening to you talk. I was going to go more, you know, macro and long-term. First, I was going to quote Rick Rule and say a line I've heard him say a bunch of times over the past 15 years, and that's some of his largest winners first went down 50%. And you've got to have the wherewithal to be able to embrace and hold through that volatility. The other thing he says a lot is if you're bullish on a commodity or a stock, and as you say, the thesis is intact, you should be delighted to see it on sale. You know, if you want a nice pair of whatever slacks or shirt or jacket or whatever it is you fancy, and you go to the store and it's on sale, you're happy that you were able to buy that item on sale. And you should be happy if you've done the due diligence and you know what you own, which is a theme we've been talking about for the past several weeks here, to buy things cheaper. And so I was in the market today, and I've been in the market for the past couple of days on select names, some of which I was writing about in Underground Alpha today. Buying up more shares, taking some of that what I called the Persian Gulf water that was, you know, thrown out the baby in the Persian Gulf water, right? The throwing out the baby. So I was in there buying some shares. The other thing I was going to say is back to copper is short-term volatility, war-induced volatility, black swan events. are not the supply demand equation, right?
Correct.
Like they don't alter the fact that the world doesn't have enough copper. They don't alter the fact that the military and the U.S. government is still desperate for some of those metals you just mentioned with Patriot, cesium and tantalum and germanium and gallium and antimony and on down the line, right? So those fundamentals aren't going away, and in fact, they're probably going to be exacerbated on the critical metal side, given that the Tomahawks are flying and we're using up some of these metals now, right, at a faster pace. And not to jump too far ahead in the podcast, but there's a reason that your government, if you're a U.S. citizen, is now asking Congress, which it didn't ask to go to war, which is a whole other thing maybe we'll talk about later.
They
didn't
nerve.
Ask Congress, they got to go to war, but they got to ask Congress now for $200 billion. So, yeah, if anything, the fundamentals are going to come out of this war stronger than they were before.
Yeah, and look, do we know whether this war lasts 3 weeks or 3 years or no? Nobody does, including this administration, I don't believe. I think there were miscalculations, severe miscalculations, which is kind of what happens when you say send Jared Kushner, who has no official position, to go negotiate the nuclear deal with Iran, right? I mean, the incompetence is tough to see because it's costing human lives. Real humans are dying behind this. The treasury, we just surpassed 39 trillion, and they're asking us now for 200 billion for now. That, believe you me, that's the starting number. When they didn't ask us for permission to get in there in the first place, and they still want to tell us that it's not a war. Again, the hypocrisy just drives me absolutely nuts. I want to keep it to the markets. Whether or not the war lasts for 3 months or 3 years, the one thing that is absolutely clear to me is that critical metals independence, there will be a velocity in the urgency that we have to develop North American critical metal supply chains. It's why I sleep well with the PMET position that our group has. It's why if Lion Rock is able to prove that there's still high-grade tin there, that there is high-grade lithium there, which they already kind of did. We just need to see the scale. That they have gold with economic grades, with good widths. If they could prove that, well, I'm the driver's seat with Lion Rock. I own a ton of it. Would I rather be up than down? Yes, I said that already. But we're going to see the reverberations of everything that's going on right now in the metal space, in the critical metal space. And in terms of gold, again, the debt is not going down, folks. The debt is being stretched. We have estimates that by 2050, we'll be $64 trillion in debt. Actually, I'm sorry, by 2036, by 2036, 10 years from now, we'll be $64 trillion in debt. And that was before this war. And so all of the reasons why people own gold, the physical gold and exposure to the equities, are more true now than they were a month or a month and a half ago when everybody was happy about $75 silver and $4,500, $4,600 gold. Context matters. Use the weakness in the market to add to positions. I had several subscribers write in and say, well, Gerard, I don't have any more capital to allocate. If that's the case and you don't have to sell, you just sit back and do nothing, which is the hardest thing to do when you see runs higher and runs lower and drops of 30% in a day. Of course, that's unnerving, especially if you're newer to this space. If you don't have to do nothing and you don't have the wherewithal or the capital to be able to average down or add new positions, just do nothing. Know what you own. Know why you own it. Sit tight. Let the market stabilize and let the resumption of a normal operating market resume, which it will, once all these margin calls are satisfied and the weakest hands are flushed out, which is what weeks like this absolutely do.
Well, there's lessons to be learned in there as well. I mean, being fully extended or fully invested is, I don't want to say, you know, not the right thing to do, but I had dry powder. If you read Foundational Profits, you know, I list the allocations every single month. Just as of March 13th, we were sitting in 7.5% cash and 7.5% in a high yield, you know, credit fund. So essentially 14% cash. Some of that money is now being deployed. That's that dry powder. So the cash position will come down a little bit, but that's where the cash comes from. to buy new positions. What's the saying from Mr. Dines that our friend likes to quote? Rich or poor, it's good to have cash, right? So some of that's being deployed right now. And, you know, that's inclusive of the fact that on a paper basis, my portfolios are down, as you say, a couple of houses in the past couple of days. But I still had cash to be able to add to the long-term positions that I wanted to add to. And since we're talking names, I guess I'll get a couple out of my mouth as well. So I've been talking about Dara Gold for a long time, primarily because of their project in Peru that's adjacent to Highlander Silver, which has over $1 billion market cap relative to Dara's $20 or $25 million market cap. They've been able to prove that the mineralization continues on to their property. They won't be able to drill it for a while because it's Peru, but in the interim, they've optioned a property called Cerro Bayo from Latin Metals, and they're drilling that now. And we should have some results for that in the coming weeks and months. So catalysts ahead. They also had, and this is part of what we do, a financing that came free trading. Yep. So that's created some liquidity or some selling from weaker hands that has further exacerbated the downside, but also further increased the opportunity for those that are willing to step up and buy at these cheap prices. Last week I mentioned to you Almadex Minerals as one of the premium portfolio picks. I've had a limit order set for Almadex Minerals probably for 3 or 4 months. That sometimes, you know, it just partially fills, but I've had trouble really getting the full position that I wanted. Well, that position filled in the past couple of days. And then maybe just one more. Let me see here. Headwater Gold is another one that, that I was buying in the past couple of days. They just raised another couple of million bucks, five and some, if memory serves, some of which came from a major producer, Centerra Gold, to maintain their 9.9% position. This is a company in the American Southwest, the hybrid prospect generator that's got partnerships with Centerra. They've got partnerships with Oceana Gold. They've got partnerships with Newmont, all spending money to earn into projects, and will drill some projects on their own. That you know, added dilution from the financing, which I believe was done at 58 cents, you know, correct, again, exacerbated the downside. And where are shares in Canadian terms today? Let me punch it in. 46
Headwater's
cents.
46 cents. Yeah.
So they just closed the financing literally today at 58 cents that smart money went into. And you can buy it at 46 cents, which I took the liberty to do. And then on the larger side, on the gold scripts or the royalty side, I was in there buying the royalty names as well.
Yeah. And again, folks, that tells you how irrational the sell-off has become, right? The one position on my little stock ticker thing deal that I have on my phone that was in the green was one that we mentioned last week, Cereals Resources, right? They just closed a $25 million financing. Again, another company that doesn't have to go to the market for the next year or two. And so, yes, you know, the wild swings, whether it's Hannon or Kingsman or, you know, Cereals, you pick your name, Headwater, they're not fun when they go to the downside, but it's not consequential if you don't have to sell large positions in order to satisfy a call or a demand, right? And so keep it in perspective, keep it in context. Gold, silver market is absolutely still a bull market, and markets will stabilize in due course. Do nothing if you can't add. If you can add, average down. What do you got over there, Senor de Hodge?
I've got a letter of transmittal that needs to be mailed out to get my Cereo shares into my account. So tried to do that yesterday. Or I had my wife was going to the post office, and I asked her to send it. They wanted to have a customs form. So FYI, if you mail it through USPS, make sure you get your little customs form as well. Which, again, doesn't make sense in this bizarre world, because you could just stick it in an envelope with five or six stamps and not do a customs form, but a little too important for no tracking.
I hear you. How, look, obviously with everything going on in the Middle East, energy, gas, oil, how does that look to you? We actually closed, funny to me, because I do think that the U.S. is intervening in the markets, but closed down 1.35%, crude oil did at $95, yet I see a dollar index that's still above 99. And again, the dollar index and volatility is telling me that this war isn't anywhere near being over. How does the energy space look to you, Nick? I don't dabble in it.
I mean, it's bullish. Obviously, just look at the prices, right? You know, another Dames Dines quote, don't think, look. I mean, you had oil that was 60 or 65 bucks just a couple of months ago, screaming to what you just said, closing at 95, 96 bucks. Brent was up at 122 over the past week or thereabouts, 120. And is certainly over 100 now as, you know, this war escalates. We start dropping bombs on gas fields in Qatar, and we're seemingly content to destroy infrastructure on both sides of the conflict or the war. And so it's bullish. And this is another thing that I've been talking about, not because I'm some great prognosticator, but just because the market dictated that it was time to start buying energy stocks. So, you know, as early as the, you know, February issue of Foundational Profits, I was recommending buying MLPs, and not because I knew bombs were going to fly, but because we had been talking about sector rotation, which we documented on this podcast, and it was clear that energy was starting to lead the pack. So, you know, I had people ask me questions as well. Like I was talking to my insurance lady the other day, and she was like, I don't understand if the U.S. is, you know, independent, self-sustaining in terms of oil production. You know, why are the prices going up so much if the problems are all over in the Middle East and then the Strait of Hormuz? And I took a second to talk about fungibility and the fact that, you know, oil here is oil there. Some of the oil that we have, even though we're self-sustaining, still goes out of the country to be refined. And it's truly a global market, the same way that gold is a global market. And so, and the analogy I used was, you know, it was with the Strait of Hormuz, and I was saying it was like a dare. Like, I dare you to go through the Strait for $80. I dare you for $90. I dare you for $100. And that's sort of like where the market's at now, right? And so trying to find where's that price equilibrium that's going to sustain the market going forward. At the same time, it's going to be really beneficial for companies in the United States that don't have exposure to that conflict or war in the Middle East. So, you know, the Chevrons, the Exxons of the world, their buys, the U.S. pipeline companies are buys. We own one in Underground Alpha called Genesis Energy, ticker GEL, that has a Gulf of whatever you want to call it, pipeline, Gulf of Mexico, Gulf of America. That seems like decades ago, but I'm sure it wasn't that long ago. So, and then the natural gas complex, which I don't dabble in a lot, but that's clearly bullish as well, given the damage to infrastructure in Qatar that we've seen particularly. And natural gas prices are a bit more fragmented. We've got Henry Hub price. We've got prices in Europe. They're priced a little bit differently, but the price of natural gas in Europe has gone up quite precipitously. And so I don't have any recommendations for you in the natural gas complex outside of the pipeline plays, but the oil complex, the energy complex in general is obviously bullish.
Interest rates, volatility. We have an incoming Fed chair if he's able to get the nomination in time. We had Jerome out there this week doing what he's been doing for quite a bit now, making a fool of himself and you know, dancing with the hotter than inflation. It was hotter by like 125%.
It's going to 3%.
It is going to 3%. Estimates were 0.3%, came in at 0.7% higher. And so look, the analysts, the economists that were polled by Dow Jones missed that by 125%. So next time you have an analyst or an economist give you advice, just, you know, make sure you know what that economist or that analyst actually does for a living. Very different being in the field than sitting behind a keyboard and reading theory about it, right? So how do you see rates, Nick? How do you see, I mean, the dollar index clearly looks bullish to me. It's still the reserve currency. It's still the cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry basket. How do you see volatility and rates correlating with each other?
This is a tougher one. Let me share the screen. and a bond expert. I am not, but I do dabble in the macro. So let's get a chart up here. First, the 2-year. There's the button blocked. There's the 2-year yield. So this trend has obviously broken, this downtrend in the 2-year yield. This is short-term rates controlled by Fed policy or what the market thinks Fed is going to do. We keep getting pushed back on the rate cuts now, right? Warsh announced is sort of old news. That's when rates initially started to spike up. They took Warsh as a hawk. And then the two-year yield fell down into the end of February when the war in Iran started. And then what you said happened. So now inflation is starting to go back up. At first, we were pricing in rate cuts in June, July timeframe. And then we were pricing them in the September, October timeframe. And now we're only pricing in one December. Potential rate cut this year, not until the end of the year. So the yield curve is steepening. The two-year yield is going up much higher and much faster than the 10-year yield is up. So let's look at the 10-year for 1 second. I like lines on charts, if you can't tell already. I just keep them there. So we've been in a bear market for 10-year yields as well. And I would argue we haven't really come out of it yet. Yes, we've peaked above the trend line. We did that back in January, and you can see the bear market in yields did not end. They went all the way down to new lows, in fact, down to 3.9-ish percent. And now they're on the way back up. I don't think this is sustainable, the rise in yields I'm talking about. Obviously, you've got mortgage rates that are coming up higher.
Yep.
I don't believe that we sustain ourselves above 4.2%. I think we get back to lower 10-year yields in the future. This is more tied to economic growth prospects. And obviously, those are now slowing. We had a lower print for Q4 GDP came out at 1.5%. That's relative to the, 3.5, near 4% growth we are experiencing in earlier quarters of 2025. And you'll likely see it down around that number for the first quarter of 2026. The tariffs, which nobody talks about anymore because we've gone from trade wars to hot wars. But the tariffs obviously took a bite out of growth with everything costing more.
And imagine that's only that.
That's correct. That's only going to get worse now with energy prices higher. So tough for the economy to grow at 3-5% when you've got oil prices doing what they're doing. They're well over $6 here. I was on my way to a basketball game yesterday and always glance up at the gas station I pass. We were $6.09 on the diesel here in Washington State. And the other thing I would say is utilities have been going up, the sector of the S&P, the utility sector. And that tells me that one, it's a safety trade is on, but two, big money that, rotates into those sectors don't think that the higher rates are going to last because the utilities are quite dependent on rates, and they normally trade they're commensurately with those. If the rates are going down, that's better for the utilities because of the large capital expenditures that they have with the hard assets. And I don't mean hard assets metals, I mean hard assets generation equipment, right? The capital assets. So I don't know if that's a good answer for you or not. And again, a lot of wait and see. And the crystal ball is certainly murkier now than it has been in previous months.
All right. So that's the market, folks. Gold bull market, silver bull market, copper's bearish short term, midterm, long term, absolute bull market. All of the critical metals will be more in demand, not less in demand, as a result of this war and volatility. So hopefully that provides a bit of guidance for you all. The world isn't getting any stabler, unfortunately. I would like to mention a couple of things societally that kind of, I think, were ignored this week, and maybe by design. The Epstein files are still mostly redacted and mostly not released, right? And so in this week of chaos, quietly, Bank of America settled a lawsuit brought on behalf of Jeffrey Epstein victims, which is odd because our government and our administration tells me it's a hoax. But yeah, Ghislaine's sitting with a puppy in minimum security prison, and then nobody else has been arrested yet. But Bank of America, apparently, had to settle a lawsuit, which was brought on by victims. So the lawsuit was brought on by the victims alleging and obviously Bank of America settling tells you that this happened, that they ignored $170 million that Leon Black paid from a Bank of America account to Epstein for tax and estate planning advice. And there were several of these transactions that any auditor would have been able to flag, catch, investigate. They were told not to. What drives me absolutely insane, one is the fact that nobody else has been arrested. Two, the fact that we're now turning the rape in of girls and women and who God knows what else, right? Into civil matters. This is not a civil matter, folks. I will say this, Cesar Chavez is someone that, especially if you come from a Hispanic background, that was a champion of unions and farm workers, legal farm workers, I should add. He's got a very checkered history when it came to immigration. He was very anti-immigration. Let's forget all of that. He was now accused by several women, including, you know, one of the co-leaders of his movement, of raping them and of sexual assault of women and girls. And it's absolutely repulsive. I wish he was alive so they could put him under the prison and he could meet the justice that he deserves. I am somewhat encouraged that at the very least, people on both sides, I'll give the left credit here on this one, came out, and I'll give, you know, the movement and anybody that's been a supporter of Chavez came out and said, it's reprehensible. We stand with the victims. Basically, fuck that guy. And yes, take down the statues and rename the schools and rename the streets. We don't celebrate rapists in that movement. We don't celebrate sexual abusers. I wish that was the standard for everyone else. I wish everybody responded the same way, regardless of who it is, whether it's Leon Black or Wexner or whoever the heck, anybody that had anything to do with anything. If it's proven, if settlements were made, I can't for the life of me understand why there hasn't been justice. I have an idea, and I'm sure you all have an idea as well. It's part of why we're in this war right now, a large part of it anyhow. But somewhat, you know, in what is horrible news and just so disheartening, and heart goes out to all of the girls and women that were raped by this asshole. I am glad to see people on both sides saying, yeah, no, there's no debate here. We can unite around this. Fuck that guy. No exceptions, folks. No exceptions. When your team does, it doesn't make it any better. Zero exceptions around that issue. So I don't know. Maybe that'll start a trend of like, hey, we're just not going to allow this. Like, this is not going to be celebrated.
One can hope, but he's also not currently in power, like the pedophiles that are in the Epstein files,
Agreed.
of which I remain more concerned about. I was thought of a little rhyme earlier. Like, I'm still more concerned about pedophile politicians than Iranian munitions, for sure. Like, for sure. They're more a threat to my country and my democracy than whatever Iran was doing is or was. That's what I believe. So, and I do believe there's the two are connected in some respects with the Israel connection. So, yeah, I don't think it's hard to draw those lines.
I agree. Let's talk about who is being investigated. The former senior intelligence official, Mr. Joe Kent, who just recently resigned. He's a former Green Beret. He was a, you know, director of the National Counterterrorism Center. Lost his wife in the battlefield. Has, I mean, one of the most decorated people in the administration basically wrote a letter and said, I don't have the moral bankruptness to stick it out with this administration and continue to do what we're doing for a war that I feel we were led into by a foreign power, right? That's what he said. And immediately, the response by the administration, the same administration that's telling you there will be no more investigations into Epstein and his co-abusers, right? They immediately launched an investigation on Mr. Kent to see if he had leaked any intelligence. And so, again, this is one of the most important positions. It's the National Counterterrorism Center. And he doesn't have it in him to continue to see this through. And immediately the smearing begins. And look, do I know that he did or did not leak anything? I don't know. I'm not against, you know, investigating it. I just want anybody that commits a crime to be investigated, right? Including people in this administration. And again, I am somewhat hopeful that one day we will see people be investigated and be held to account. Because again, the thing that separates the United States and makes us the cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry basket, right? Still the greatest thing going, like Ric Flair used to say, right? Is the rule of law. And the more that we debase and strip the Constitution an amendment at a time, go to war without asking permission, but then coming back and asking for a couple of hundred billion, we're sending 2,500 to 5,000 additional troops. We'll find out eventually. They don't want to tell us how many are dying or getting injured. That's a no-no now. We need law and order. We need the rule of law. It is what separates us from so many places around the world. And so hopefully that continues to be upheld. Hopefully we find some reason within this country here in the coming years from our elected leaders and the people that are supposed to be doing this. But I mean, at least this guy who's, again, decorated and again, brought on by the Trump administration, at least he had the conscience and the moral stature to say, I can't do this in good conscience. And, you know, do we know what he knows? No, but he got on Tucker Carlson yesterday and he was pretty clear about his opinions, not holding back, and don't think he'll hold back given his background and his track record.
Well, it doesn't pass the smell test and it reeks of McCarthyism and it reeks of you are not towing the line and spouting our propaganda or bullshit or whatever you want. And so we're going to investigate you. It's retaliatory. Retaliatory is what it seems like. And even Tucker Carlson was saying that he himself was being investigated by the CIA because of his opposition to the current administration. And that's not American either. In a representative democracy with freedom of speech, you're allowed to question your government. In fact,
have a responsibility to.
Correct. The strongest form of patriotism is open and honest dissent, questioning the authority. And so clearly they're going after this guy and others. I was reading just before we started recording, I think, some over 100 people are being investigated for leaks. But really, it's just, oh, you're not saying or doing what we want you to do. And so we're gonna investigate you and either tarnish your reputation or try to put the stain or blemish on your record, whether or not it's true. And it's just funny how we can drum up the CIA and an FBI to investigate these folks, where again, no convictions, no arrests on the from them on the Epstein side of
things. No investigation,
right?
Even so, other than shut it down. The only time they've gotten involved is to say shut it down, shut it down, shut it down.
Correct.
Yeah, nasty work. Look, back to the markets here before we go. I touched on it last week briefly towards the end. I don't want people to underestimate that the longer this war goes, the fertilizer supply it should be of concern to everyone, whether you're a farmer or not. Farmers feel it more directly because it is a large input cost. But that has ramifications that go much deeper than just having to pay more for food. There comes a point where if the fertilizer just isn't available, the food isn't going to be available. And I don't want to be an alarmist, but it is something to be watched, right? Natural gas and fertilizer and all of these necessities for life and for food, not being able to be transported from point A to point B to get to point C to put food on our table should not be underestimated. And again, it's another one of those things that apparently nobody planned for, which drives me insane, Nick. I'm sorry, but
I mean, yeah, they didn't. Yeah, it's on down the line to the European allies are coming and they're all shaking their heads saying, no, the fuck we aren't. All kind of stuff out there is scary. And I was looking up a company called CVR Partners that I have no stake in, ticker UAN.
You know, that stock has gone from $90, $95 to $140 in the past 3 weeks. It's a fertilizer stock. So, yeah, lots of precariousness out there in supply chains, from fertilizers to critical metals across the board. So, par for the course in this fourth turning. And I guess the joke I would say is, probably got enough bullshit in DC to fertilize the crops.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. Look, folks, I hope some of this was helpful. I hope, Nick,
we got to talk about gold and where to buy it.
That's where I was going. Absolutely. I was just going to say, this is absolutely a gold precious metals bull market. I am fairly confident that we end 2026 with new all-time highs, closer to $6,500 than $4,500. And so this pullback should absolutely be used. If you don't have physical gold and you want exposure to physical gold, and that can be coins, it could be, you start a collection from $100 to, you know, $100 million, whatever your income level or expertise level or comfort level is. If you're looking for physical exposure, we're very fortunate to have, you know, a mentor that has been generous with this time, that has been generous to both Nick and I. He also happens to be the guy, like the collectibles guy, the go-to person in the entire world. And a large part of that clearly, comes as a result of his expertise in constructing gold portfolios and coin portfolios. And the bottom line is, he is the creme de la creme. He is the best at what he does. And that is Mr. Ban Simmons from David Hall Rare Coins. I know, Nick, you wanted to say a few words there with Ban, but there's just, if you want reputable, if you want expertise, and again, it could be from a small collection to, you know, he deals with some of the biggest people on the planet. That's the man, folks.
That's a fact. I mean, you know, he deals with some of the world's wealthiest families. He'll source collections of coins for, you know, millions of dollars, all the way down to, as you said, hundreds of dollars. He is the dealer's dealer. He is the grader's grader. I was looking to see if I had a graded coin behind me, but I don't. The only one that's on my shelf back there is not in an MS case. But if you know anything about coins or graded coins and how they are graded, Mr. Simmons was the gentleman who helped come up with that standard. He literally helped found the standard by which gold coins are graded, ended up putting that standard inside a company called Collectors Universe, which was a publicly traded stock that also owned PSA, which is, I think, Professional Sports Authority or something like that, but a grader of all kinds of memorabilia, right? Baseball cards, baseball bats, all sorts of historic sports memorabilia. That company ended up getting sold to the gentleman who owns the New York Mets, Steve Cohen, for something like $1 billion. And I'm not sure if Van is still on the board or not, but he was on the board for a long time.
So.
He'll source all sorts of things for you. Just a little tangent, and I'll get back to it in a second. Like you were saying, you can own gold in all sorts of different ways. You can buy the little Costco ounces or 10th ounces or whatever it is that they're selling. You can buy jewelry either at a jewelry store, or there's another company called Mene, M-E-N-E, I think that's how you say it, whose whole deal is they're making jewelry out of pure gold and also platinum, if that's your deal. You can get different sorts of jewelry, and they track it for you. You can have an account on that website and see what the pieces you've bought are worth. I know, because I bought a couple of pieces and given them to my wife and daughters, and they don't wear them because they're too heavy. Not that they're huge pieces of jewelry, but because they're pure, so they're heavier than, you know, other sorts of 14 carat or 18 carat. My wife says they pull down on her ears. And I was looking at my account the other day, and it was obviously up. I haven't looked in the past couple of days, but maybe I'll buy another piece of jewelry. But anyway, back to Van. You know, if you're looking for bullion, American Eagles, Cinco Dans, some of the older stuff, Indian heads, Buffalo heads. I mean, he's the man. Rolex watches, which I know you know a little bit about, Gerardo. And so I think the website, as you said, David Hall Rare Coins, DHRC, David Hall Rare Coins. And we don't get anything for this, by the way. Van's just been generous with his time.
Yep.
He's been a mentor. He's been a business connector and facilitator. And so we like to throw him business and sing his praises, obviously because they're worth singing, given the track record that we just went through. So if you're looking to take advantage of the pullback in gold prices, he would be the first one I reached out to start or add to a collection of precious metals or bullion or even some forms of jewelry.
Yeah. And again, the most reputable person in the space that I know. So it's easy for us to make that recommendation for the simple fact that we know we're leaving you in good hands, right? Nick, look, interesting times. I can't wait to see what the overnight markets do. Again, I expect $200 to $300 moves in gold, both ways, like to the upside, to the downside. Trend is clear as all day to me. Having friends and family reaching out, worried about their positions, always lets me know that we're probably close to a bottom, because that's usually the way that it works. So that makes my heart smile a bit. But look, it's going to be volatile during the year. Make sure the companies that you own are adding value. If you don't know why you still own the company, ask them. Ask them what they're doing to add value. Ask what the plan is, right? We take a lot of pride in the stock picks that we make, in following up and holding, you know, boards of directors and CEOs and presidents to account, to make sure that, look, if it is a tough market like the week that we've had, that there's value being added. And as long as that's happening, then, you know, the rest of it, as I like to say, it's just noise, right? So that, take that for what it's worth. I don't have anything else unless you have something there, Nick.
No, that's it. It's madness. It's March Madness. Go Zags. And we'll see what these markets do.
Opening day next week for my Cubs. I couldn't be more excited about that. We got us a squad. That's all for now, folks. I'm Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 357th episode of our weekly therapy session, and we needed it this week, that we call Investing in Bizarro World. Let's see what next week brings us, folks. Looking forward to seeing where things shake out here over the next several days.
See ya.